Fancy a game?
Found the ships though, didn't I? Couldn't find your own ass with both hands.
And a map.
Looking at the way this guy's been playing in his last few games, I don't see how he's ranked amongst the best. Let's just hope he doesn't lose any of those scholarships.
Tyler Bischoff is...
We don't want your fancy life-changing career starting moving out of my parents' house college education.
Technically correct.
Hello, Las Vegas. I'm Tyler Bischoff. He's Jared Justice. Mike Grabala will join us a little bit later. Talk about UNLV football, some UNLV basketball. He's in Utah. Figure out what he's going to eat in Utah.
Yeah. Are we going to ask him about stuff inside a Jell-O?
Stuff inside a what?
Stuff inside a Jell-O. I sent you a text about it.
Stuff inside of Jell-O. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's the official food of Utah.
It is? Just stuff inside of Jell-O?
Like marshmallows and random stuff inside of Jell-O.
They do that in Utah?
According to the internets.
All right. I wonder if Mike likes Jell-O. I bet you there's a consistency problem with him.
I can't wait.
But the Golden Knights are 1-4. Same record as the Raiders, the team we're sitting here telling you needs to start tanking more often. Golden Knights have not been good. Big picture real quick on the Golden Knights. 5 games in. According to Hockey Reference, thanks to Jesse Granger for this tweet, 11.6% chance of making the playoffs and a 1.1% chance of winning the Pacific Division after a 1-4 start. Dom Lucijan, however you say his last name, of The Athletic, he has a model that gets updated every day of playoff probabilities. They were at 49% before last night's game, and they lost. So, it's only 5 games. It's only 1-4-0. But, like, did they just play themselves out of the playoffs already? Like, is that a thing that's just happened?
No.
No? I got a fun stat for you.
How many hockey games are there?
82. This is 6% of the season.
I think they'll be fine.
You want a fun stat? I got a couple fun stats. I do this thing where I call these fun stats and then they end up being very not fun.
Soul-crushing
stat. Worst 5-game stretch in Golden Knights history in the regular season because they lost the Stanley Cup final in 5 games. But twice last season, the Golden Knights did have stretches where they lost 4 or 5 games. But in both of those stretches, they had at least one overtime loss. So they got a loser point along the way. So 2 points from 5 games is the worst 5-game stretch the Golden Knights have ever had. Another sad stat, soul-crushing stat here. Last year, 16 playoff teams in the NHL. Only one of those teams had one loss or fewer. That was the Minnesota Wild. And the Minnesota Wild, through 5 games, I should say, one win or fewer. Man, I ruined that. I'm going to start over here. Soul-crushing stat. Last year's playoff teams in the NHL, in their first 5 games, only one of them had one win or fewer in their first 5 games. That was the Minnesota Wild. The Wild, however, went 1-2-2, meaning they picked up 2 losses in overtime. So they had, through 5 games, 4 points. Golden Knights have 2. Again, it's 6% of the schedule.
That seems like a small sample size.
Just last year?
No, 6% of the schedule.
It is. But the point is, you don't really get to have this many, you don't get to have many 5-game stretches where you only win 1 game and make the playoffs. Like, because what it means for the Golden Knights, because in hockey, you need to be 500. The loser point makes things so weird, but you need to be 500. You can kind of be below 500 because of the loser points you can get. But you need, basically, be 500. You kind of sort of have a shot at the playoffs. So for the Golden Knights, they need to win 5 games in a row at some point just to make up for this. You know how many times they won 5 games in a row last year?
You're about to give me a bagel, aren't you?
No, 3 times.
Oh, well,
they had an 8-game winning streak last year. But so last season, what the Golden Knights did, they had a couple of stretches where they lost 4 or 5. They responded to those with 5-game winning streaks, and then they had an 8-game winning streak as well, and they won the Pacific Division. But they've got to get just a 5-game winning streak just basically gets them back on track to being a playoff team.
May I pitch you on an idea?
What idea?
Well, it seems like they're home a lot more January, February, March, April. What if they just sweep those?
They won't, but yeah, they'll presumably play better at home. I mean, they had I think it was the second best home record in hockey last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's two things. One, this is the longest road trip of the season. They start the year with 5 of their first 6 on the road, 5 in a row on the road. They haven't played the Pacific Division yet, which is probably the worst division in hockey, and it's their division. So, like, they can kind of take care of this by just beating the teams in their division that are supposed to be worse than the rest of the divisions. And by playing 5 straight road games to start the year, you effectively have more home games at the end of it. So, yes, the schedule should be easier the rest of the way. Yes, this will mean nothing if they go in and beat up on the Pacific Division. The problem is that it's not like they went to Washington and lost 3-2. It's not like they went to Pittsburgh and lost 2-1. It's not like they went to Buffalo and lost in a shootout. It's not like the Flyers came to Vegas and beat them in overtime. They're getting beat down in these games. Like, the underlying numbers of shots, Corsi, scoring chances, high danger chances are good, but the scoreboard, they're getting beat down in these games. It's not like, oh, the Golden Knights just needed one bounce and they would have won that game. No, they're one bounce away from being 0-5 to start the year.
God.
Like, all of these games are getting beat down. So, yes, they'll get to play the Pacific Division. Yes, they'll get to play at home more. But it's not like they're particularly close to winning these games.
And it's, in your mind, it's all defense.
When you say that, are you saying all the defensemen or all just the defensive play?
Defensive play.
No, they're not scoring enough either. I mean, William Karlsson hasn't scored a goal yet. Dude scored 43 goals last year, wanted to bet on himself because he thought, I can do something similar again. He hasn't scored yet in 5 games. Jonathan Marchessault is the only good player on this team. Like, they're not scoring enough either. Like, they bring in Pacioretty and Stasny. I know Stasny's hurt, so maybe we give him a little bit of a break right now. But they've got one goal between the two of them, and that was in a empty. They pulled Fleury. It was a 6-on-5 situation. Like, they haven't scored at 5-on-5. So, no, they need to score more.
Christ.
And, like, last night, David Perron gets a hat trick for St. Louis, one of the guys that George McPhee let walk in free agent. Same game, James Neal on the Flames scores a goal. So, two guys that George McPhee let walk in free agent scored 4 goals in 1 game last night. Meanwhile, the Golden Knights need 2 games to score 4 as a team. So, yeah, no, they need to score more. I mean, absolutely, they need to score more.
What was their... Yeah, no, big sigh. Their identity last year seemed to be speed.
Yeah, they're not playing as fast. And
is that...
If you take... They got beat by speed last night, too. Because, I mean, Phil Kessel goes straight down the center of the ice twice, splitting the same 2 defensemen, Braden McNabb and Colin Miller, your top pair, twice. I mean, same exact play, twice.
Is it... God, this is going to sound stupid, but is it the same thing with, like, Super Bowl teams where there's, like, a bit of a hangover where you played into June?
The Capitals just beat the brakes off of them, so...
Yeah, and the best player, what, scored 2 goals?
Yeah, after doing keg stands all summer. So maybe they should have done more keg stands during the summer. Got a couple quotes here from Gerard Gallant. First one. Overall, we played a real good game tonight and got nothing from it. Second one. We just have to keep working and stay with it. We had a lot of good chances tonight, but the puck didn't go in the net until late. We have to stick with it, and sooner or later, it'll go in for us. Now, here's the thing. I think I kind of agree with him. Like, again, the underlying stats suggest the Golden Knights are better than a 1-4 team. All of the Corsi and everything suggests this team is decent. At least better than 1-4. But when I saw those, the only thing that I could think of was, imagine Tony Sanchez walking into a press conference, head coach of a 1-4 UNLV football team, losing a game 42-21 and going into the press conference and saying, yeah, we played a good game tonight. Just didn't get anything from it. He would get ripped to shreds. Like, people would rip Tony Sanchez to shreds for saying something like that.
Well, people would. I'm not sure the media would.
I think we would.
Well, yeah, you would, and I would, to probably a much lesser extent, but...
No, I mean, listen, if Tony Sanchez walked in after...
We didn't get anything from it. Like, I don't... What does that even mean?
Yeah, he thought they played well.
We played well, but lost.
But it's just...
Is this the same thing as, oh, they're just, you know, when those players play well, we can't do anything.
Basically. But, like, I'm just, like, to me, the thing that jumped out, and again, I don't necessarily completely disagree with Gallant, but, like, UNLV loses, like, a close game at times. Or, like, they lose to USC or something like that. And people rip Tony Sanchez. Like, the funniest thing to me is always when somebody, like, responds to, like, one of my tweets and they, like, tag UNLV's athletic director in it and is like, this is unacceptable. Fire Tony Sanchez. Like, that's always my favorite. When they're like, this is how I'm going to get through the athletic director. I'm going to tag her on Twitter. But, like, that happens. Like, people will tag Tony Sanchez after some of his quotes that I tweet out and be like, you're a joke, Tony Sanchez. Like, that type of stuff happens. None of that happens to Gerard Gallant. Like, to be fair, Sinbin.Vegas tweeted out one of those quotes, and there were some people saying, like, this is getting old. Like, they were like, this is a dumb excuse. But none of them were like, oh, Gerard Gallant. Nothing was directly at him. Whereas if this was Tony Sanchez or even Marvin Menzies, they're getting crucified if they say something like that after getting doubled up and falling to 1-4.
Jesus Christ.
So what do we have to do to get Jake Bischoff in a game? They're 1-4. They've given up 4 or more goals in all of the losses. And you can easily point to the defensive core as not being good. The top line twice let Phil Kessel just skate down the middle and score. Twice. Where's Jake Bischoff? All right. I did a thing.
Oh, man.
I
literally have it right now as the first commercial we play, but I'll delete it.
No. I think that's against the law.
Oh, okay.
No. I did a thing. I made another Jake Bischoff defensive enhancement commercial. I feel like, I don't know, I'm a little hesitant about this. Like, there's some good jokes in there that I'm proud of, but I feel like I went back to the well when I shouldn't have gone back to the well for another round of this.
My entire joke career is based on going to the same well over and over again, so.
Okay. Well, we'll play it for you. Here's another reason to invest in Jake Bischoff.
Are you worried this is going to end up just like Florida? Do you have the phone number of a cab company in every NHL city? Then you should try the number one defensive enhancement that is already sitting in your press box, Jake Bischoff. With Jake Bischoff, your pair will never be split at the blue line again. Cross-ice passes will be intercepted. The nightmares of Washington's power play will stop. Side effects of Jake Bischoff include better questions from Jesse Granger, fewer hat tricks from Chubby Men. So give Jake Bischoff a try before this city forgets what hockey is.
Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Proud to be a connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Utah State is averaging 50 points per game.
At LVCubFan21 on Twitter said that was awesome. I assume he's talking about the Jake Bischoff commercial. So I'm going to say going back to the well was a good thing.
It's never, from my experience, a bad one.
Okay.
All right.
I did it. If he continues to not play, do we have to make a third one now?
Yes, but I think we need to go with like a Zoloft commercial.
Change the drug up a little bit.
Yeah, we need to
come back to the male enhancement pill too much.
Yeah, I think we've bleated that one dry.
UNLV's allowing 32 points per game. Utah State scoring 50. New Mexico put up 50 on them. USC 43. The rest of them were 24, 17, and 27. So two games are kind of making that UNLV total look bad. You've got a take here on the UNLV defense?
No, I was just going to point out that despite not falling on a very loose fumble, Gabe McCoy has been rated as like one of the most underappreciated Mountain West players.
Gabe McCoy's been really good this year. He has had two plays in the last two games that have been pretty major mistakes. Arkansas State's game-winning touchdown, he completely whiffed on a tackle that led to whatever that was, a 40-yard run, and then he didn't pick up that fumble, which at the time it would have been big. It was still a close game. Because I tweeted about one of those, and he liked it or something like that, and I was like, oh, God, now Gabe McCoy's not going to like me. But no, he's really good. Like, when we talk about the defense being better, it's kind of just because of Gabe McCoy. Like, he's the one that's being better. This defense, I don't know what to do because they looked improved through four games. They had 11 sacks, but then they gave up 50 points to New Mexico. And we can kind of cut them a break because the offense went six drives before getting a first down, and it's like, all right, how much does the defense have to stay on the field? They kind of got hung out to dry.
They were getting burned, though.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And it wasn't on like short or intermediate routes. They were getting burned deep.
Yeah, I mean, they had no interceptions, no pass breakups. So the defensive backs basically, statistically, had zero impact.
they might as well have just lined up.
Yeah. Zero impact on the passing game.
In the box.
They had no sacks either. They strangely had their season high for tackle for loss with 9, though. I don't think they're better than they were last year, but like, if we look at efficiency ratings at the end of the year, like, they're usually 115. They're better, but they're probably going to be like 108. Like, they're not going to be that much better. I think we've overinflated how good the defense played based on Prairie View A&M being terrible, UTEP being terrible, Arkansas State playing in a downpour, and I mean, even USC hasn't been that good this year, and USC had one quarter where they just crushed UNLV, so I think we've overrated the improvement of UNLV's defense.
Jonathan Marchessault assisted on both of the Golden Knights' goals last night.
Yeah, I said this earlier, he might be their only good player. Like, for real, at the moment. His setup for Riley Smith's goal, which was the second one last night, oh, that was terrific. Like, he just created everything on that. And then the first goal with Tomasz Nosek, Marchessault was on the rush, didn't like what he saw. He basically held the puck long enough for a secondary rush, and Tomasz Nosek, who had just come off the bench, to get up the ice and then found him in Nosek's court. So far this year, Marchessault, 2 goals, 4 assists in 5 games. So he's been a part of 6 goals. The Golden Knights have scored 9 goals.
So 2/3.
He's great. Everyone in the offseason that got paid, they need to give their money to Jonathan Marchessault instead.
The Golden Knights are 0 of 13 on the power play this season.
Put Ryan Reeves out there. Like, all right.
It worked in the preseason.
This show, I kind of try to mix dumb, stupid, funny stuff with smart analysis. The whole play Jake Bischoff thing is just because I have the same last name and I want that guy to play because it makes me happy. The whole Ryan Reeves on the power play thing is just because it's funny. But in all seriousness now, both of those two things probably should happen.
Oh, God.
Like, there's no reason Jake Bischoff or Brad Hunt has not played for the Golden Knights yet. Like, one of those two guys, or both, like, needs to play for the Golden Knights soon. Ryan Reeves, I don't know why you wouldn't put him on the power play. They haven't scored yet. Like Gerard Gallant last night, he loaded up the first power play unit where he put the first line, Marchessault, Smith, Carlson, with Max Pacioretty and Shea Theodore. Though he was basically like, these are our five best power play guys.
That's the superstar team.
Put them out there. They didn't score. They had a couple good shifts, but they didn't score. It kind of leaves your second power play unit with Paul Stastny and Alex Tuch being hurt and Nate Schmidt being suspended. You kind of just have random parts out there. Make Ryan Reeves one of the random parts.
He at least could body a dude.
I don't know. And they just haven't scored a power play goal. And part of the reason they're bad is because they're, I think, negative four on power play goals. Like, they've given up four without scoring one. So, I mean, that hurts.
On Twitter, I believe...
My favorite place.
Hey, man, it's where I live. It was, I believe, Ken Bulkey was just lamenting that the fact that they put stuff near the goal all the time. Like, all of these shots are on target. And they just, like...
They're close to scoring.
And it's... But it's just, like, none of... This is almost... not historically, but this is, like, ridiculously unlucky as far as we hit puck. Puck goes where it's supposed to. Puck doesn't go in?
As soon as they widen the net by 1 foot, the Golden Knights will be back.
UNLV landed a commitment from three-star linebacker Seth Robinson.
Watch out. He had offers from Arizona, Louisville, and Iowa State. That's a big change from the usual UNLV football recruit who's got offers from, like, a couple Division II schools in Georgia Southern.
Just unnecessary shot.
He's from Scottsdale, Arizona. Big picture look with this recruit, though. Like, UNLV's had a bad defense the entire Tony Sanchez era. They had a bad defense before Tony Sanchez was here, too. Like, it's not new to Tony Sanchez. They've had a bad defense. One of the problems in the Sanchez era is, as far as recruiting goes, he is recruited better than the previous two UNLV coaches, but it's almost all been on the offensive side of the ball. Like, he hasn't brought in very many good defensive recruits. This guy's a three-star. He had three offers from Power 5 schools. Like, this could be good. Could be really good if he can start getting good defensive players.
How old is he?
How old is he?
Yeah, is he a... Okay, well, we had a transfer commit at halftime of the...
No, he wasn't a transfer.
Okay.
That was a high school kid.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a high school kid. High school senior. This 2019 class.
Okay.
Yeah.
And comparatively, how many linebackers... I always thought that they only played, like... They have two outside linebackers, and then they have...
A middle linebacker?
Yeah.
Yeah? What are you asking? He's more of an edge rusher, outside
that's
linebacker
what I'm
slash defensive end, if that's what you're trying to get to.
Yes.
That's what his position
I'm just,
seems
I'm
to
taking
be.
A real long road to get there. Derek Carr leads the NFL in interceptions.
AJ McCarron time, right?
Make Brent Musburger much happier.
What happened to, like, John Gruden?
Just what happened to being
excited to work with Derek Carr? Like, wasn't he supposed to make Derek Carr good?
The problem is that everyone was running on the assumption that Derek Carr was good to begin with and that John Gruden would improve him. Derek Carr wasn't good. He hasn't been good.
He hasn't been good this year.
No, legitimately, his best season, he was behind one of the best offensive lines in football. But every other year, he has been either the luckiest quarterback in the world, i.e., dropped interceptions or overthrows that should be interceptions, and the safety just ignores the fact that the ball is just out there floating. And the...
You got lost, didn't you?
No, I was going to say...
Oh, what do you got?
I was trying to formulate the words. He feels pressure that isn't there a lot of the time. Or he lets pressure get to him that he could easily negate by stepping up in the pocket or resetting his feet or shifting the pocket left or right. But instead, Derek's starting to look a lot like David.
Jared hates Derek Carr.
Yeah. The next three Raider opponents are 4-11.
Seahawks are 2-3. Colts are 1-4. 49ers are 1-4. The wins are coming now. Three in a row, right?
I thought we as a show embrace tanking.
We do. So these are big weeks. They need to lose. This is going to decide the draft order this week. Not this week, the next 4 weeks.
Do you want to do schedule radio?
Yeah, because they also play the Cardinals later in the year. They got to beat them, too. I mean, lose to them. Beat them by losing to them.
Seattle, win or loss? It's in London.
Yeah, they might win that one on accident.
I don't think they will. The one thing Seattle doesn't have is an offensive line.
So it's not like the Raiders can take advantage of that. What do you mean?
That's what I'm saying. So you now have Russell Wilson, who's used to running for his life out the back of the pocket, going, "Oh, God, I'm going to die, going, "Huh. Well, the defensive tackle and the basketball player I converted to guard and tackle seem to be handling this group fine. Throw. So can we pencil that in as a loss?
No, they're going to beat the Seahawks, lose with the Colts, lose to the 49ers, beat the Cardinals, finish with four wins because they'll beat the Broncos too.
So that way they're just enough out.
Yeah, they'll get the sixth pick.
See, I'm thinking like there's going to be a lot of teams that only get four wins.
Yeah, maybe. The Raiders somehow still have this weird strength of schedule thing that's making them screw in their draft lottery up.
Garyon Conley played 13 snaps last week.
Daryl Worley played 49. Rashawn Melvin played 40. Leon Hall, 39. Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, 19. So of the cornerbacks, Conley played the fewest. Number one pick in 2017, last in snap count at the cornerback position. Conley's basically a rookie. He played two games last year. He's basically a rookie. If this is a rebuild, like if they're tanking, he should be playing regardless of how well or bad he is doing out there. Like, regardless of his success and failure on any given play, Garyon Conley should be playing. Leon Hall is 33 years old. Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie is 32. Rashawn Melvin is 29. Those guys are not going to be here when the Raiders are actually like, hey, this is now when we try to win. Garyon Conley might, if he's any good. Like, play him. This is not how you tank. You don't play the 32-year-old over the, 24-year-old. You play your rookie.
I thought we as a show decided that everyone knew that they were tanking but John Gruden.
Is John Gruden deciding who plays at cornerback? Because I don't think he does.
Really? Because as a head coach, I think that decision might fall on him.
Maybe, but I feel like he's not delegating the cornerback snaps throughout the game.
Rashawn Melvin was terrible.
You got anything else on the Raiders? You watched too much of the last Raiders game, didn't you?
I can go to my notes if you want me to.
Just tell what defensive lineman was bad and why was he bad?
Hankins, number 90.
Hankins, that's what you come to hear for. Hankins talk. Why was he bad? All I saw in your notes was tripped.
He couldn't leverage one-on-one coverage against, like, mediocre guard play. Like, the guard was a good half second slower off the snap than he was.
I like mediocre guard play.
I'm a huge fan of good guard play. He sets his hands, you know, like you're supposed to, like you've played defensive line, and he goes for a rip move, you know, underarm, try to block their arms. The guard just sort of goes, nope. And sort of just like re-strengthens his grip on him. And it happened, I believe, the first three times he was out there. It happened every single time. He went, all right, here comes the rip move. And the guard went, no. And just took him like 5, 6 feet to the right or to the left, depending on where the rip move was coming from.
I like mediocre guard play. Mike Kermal of the Las Vegas Sun, live from Utah, next.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Bischoff.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
There's another green brother out there somewhere. Older, younger, doesn't matter. You put him on scholarship, too. I'd put two other greens on scholarship to get Josh Green.
Technically Correct here on ESPN Las Vegas. As Jared fumbles things. Oh, those are headphones you're fumbling back there?
Yes.
I blame Mike. Mike Grimala from the Las Vegas Sun joins us. His cell phone, he's in Utah. You have no cell reception in Utah?
Well, I had a landline all set up in my hotel room, but unfortunately my hotel is doing fire drill testing. I checked in, I put my bags down, and the fire alarm went off, and they're going to go off for the next 3 hours.
Jesus.
So I had to go out. I went out to the car outside, and yeah, so now I'm out here on my cell phone.
And we appreciate the effort, although I might have enjoyed the fire alarm going off in the background.
That would have been okay. It'd be a perfect description for today's show.
I mean, I can go back in if you would like.
All right, are you in Logan, Utah, or are you staying somewhere else?
I'm in Salt Lake City. The football team booked the one hotel that's in Logan. Seriously,
the whole thing.
Seriously, there's a hotel where you stay in Logan, and for basketball, you know, for when I travel here for basketball games, it's a nice hotel, and I stay there, and then the basketball team also stays there, and then for this trip, I tried to book it, and it was all fold up. So I'm here in Salt Lake City for the moment.
Okay, so what are you going to eat while in Utah, Salt Lake / Logan?
Well, I looked before I ran out of the room. I looked around for what they have online. They have a Buffalo Wild Wings that's within my range, and they have a Perkins, which I've never been to.
Go to that one. I don't know what it is, but go to it.
You've heard of Perkins, or you haven't heard of it?
No, I've never heard of it.
I think it's like a Denny's style, like a diner type thing.
Yeah, that's precisely what it is.
And go get some syrup on your pancakes.
Famously, Tiger Woods hooked up with one of their waitresses.
Oh.
Okay.
There you go.
Jared is full of Perkins knowledge, apparently. So you're going to go to Perkins then? It's been decided?
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to get. I'm sorry. I haven't looked at the menu yet, but probably, I don't know, a burger, a cheeseburger, something like that.
Are you going to eat it at Perkins? You can't bring it back to your hotel room.
No. No, I don't want to go out there and sit in the restaurant by myself and eat it. So I'll take it back to my room where the fire alarm is going off, and I can't do anything except I can't even collect a thought, but I'll sit there and eat my lunch.
Sounds like you should stay at Perkins for longer than your meal.
I don't know about that.
All right. Mike Kermala with us. Tony Sanchez called out his players' effort after they got dump trucked by New Mexico. Did you think that was a good move by him?
Well, timing is everything when it comes to stuff like that, because like when you're going to call a team meeting, you kind of want to do it before you're playing the team that you know you're going to beat. Whereas in this case, he kind of did that, and you call out your players and you say, all right, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. This is it. It's now or never. You're either going to follow me and we're going to turn the season around, or you guys can quit and not give effort. And the problem is he did it before traveling to Utah State, where they're going to get beat by 50.
Oh, Mike Grimala. So pessimistic.
I don't think that's a very hot take. That's lukewarm at best. But the point is, when you go out and call out your players like that, you introduce like that, there's a chance now that if they go out and they fall behind by, 21 points early, or something goes wrong early on, there's a chance they just quit in this game and they get blown out and they roll over. And then what does Sanchez do to get them back at that point? There's probably not much you can do. And at that point, your season is pretty much over. Even though it's not technically over, you've still got a chance to get back in the bowl hunt, even if you lose here. But if the team quits, then you can wave goodbye to that. So that's why I was kind of, I didn't quite, the timing didn't jive me of when he called them out. I don't think he really thought about it that much. I think it was just sort of him in the moment. That's what he felt like, so that's what he did. But, I mean, they're going to have to respond this week or they're in trouble.
I don't think that Tony Sanchez in the press conference, like, I don't know, I just don't feel like the players get that. As, like, to me, what he says to them in person is going to have a much bigger impact than, oh, Tony Sanchez ripped him in the press conference. Because I doubt any of them are watching the press conference. I'm sure they'll see tweets or headlines about it, but, like, I just feel like we overblow, oh, he ripped the players' effort, what are the players going to do about that? Because that's what we get from Tony Sanchez. The players get a lot more from Tony Sanchez. They get a lot more personal from Tony Sanchez, too.
I mean, but... I mean, I kind of fall into that trap, too, where I kind of think that no one is listening. But then again, every time I write anything that can be construed as slightly negative, it always gets back to me that, oh, this player heard about it, or so-and-so heard about it. You know, it's just, and then you put yourself in their shoes. Like, if you don't think of, like, a 19- or 20-year-old kid, like, sitting in his dorm room, like, surfing the Las Vegas Sun or the Las Vegas Review Journal or ESPN 1100 website, like, reading. But... if there were a website that covered sports media and they were critiquing the Tyler Bischoff show and giving analysis on your performance and their opinion on it,
I would be all over it.
You would be reading it every day. You'd have it bookmarked and you'd check it and you'd read everything you could about it. And so would I, and so would everyone. Everyone loves to talk about themselves and read about it. That's everyone's number one favorite subject. So when Tony Sanchez goes out in the media and says, this guy is not running hard enough, this guy's punt return was pathetic, etc., like that's going to get back to them, and that's, I think it's probably going to carry more weight than what Tony Sanchez says to them afterwards when he tries to tell them, oh, you know, I meant the whole team, I meant the team wasn't playing hard enough, and I meant the team was pathetic, you know, I'm not, I think it means more to them when it hits them, wow, he really said that in a press conference. Now the team can either rally around that and say, well, I'm going to prove him wrong, and I'm going to show him what I got, and we're going to turn this around, or they can say, you know, to heck with it, we're already down by 30 at Utah State. Why am I going to play hard for this guy? I'm just going to check out for the rest of the season. So I think that goes either one of those ways.
Mike, just a weird question, but do you know the name of the show you're currently on?
Is Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Darn it! I was hoping you'd get it wrong.
Is your name part of the title of the show?
Yes, Technically Correct. With Tyler Bischoff.
But okay, so I got it right.
You called it the Tyler Bischoff Show, and I was like, he may not know the name.
I'm using a general example.
Okay. You know?
Can Max Gillum be any better?
Can't be any worse.
I mean, when you say, can he be better, like, physically, and can he play, his talent level, his talent level is what it is. He's a guy that... Great. He has to be, the coaching staff has to manage him. They've got to put him in a better position to succeed. That's something Tony Sanchez said after the game. He said it in his press conference this week. They can't throw him out to the Wolves and say, hey, we're down by 14 points, so now we're going to have you throw it 35 times today and just drop back and try to sling it around the field and get us back in the game that way, because it's just not going to work. You know, 7 carries for Lexington Thomas is not going to work. Max Gillum is not that kind of quarterback where you can just put it on his shoulders and say, hey, go score 40 points, either by running or throwing. He's not that kind of quarterback. So if he plays better, it's going to have to be on the coaching staff to put him in positions where, you know, here's the plays that we think have a really good chance of working. Here's the down and distance situation where we think we can predict what the defense is going to run and which plays might work against that. And we're going to wait and selectively call that handful of plays, and we hope that the timing is right and it works out and we can somehow stay close. Because just dropping back on 1st and 10 is not going to do it.
So this team, offensively, Lexington Thomas gets called out for not running very hard. He only got 6 carries. Max Gillum doesn't look to be any sort of quarterback that's going to lead them somewhere. They're going to be a game manager. What are they good at? Like, are these wide receivers any good? Because I'm kind of starting to think the wide receivers aren't actually that good.
Well, they haven't been part of the solution yet, and that's an issue because Gillum has said consistently since he got the job, you know, my job is to get the ball to our playmakers and let them do the rest. But I think they're still searching for those playmakers in the receiving core. You know, Brandon Presley, Darren Woods, Mekhi Stevenson, Kendall Keys, those are guys who, you know, they've been here for a while. They probably should be further along than they are now. It's it's been hard to evaluate them because of the offense that they run. And, you know, Armani's not the most accurate guy, and they run sort of an unorthodox passing game compared to the rest of college football. So it's hard to evaluate those guys. But, you know, with Gillum, they tried to throw a couple passes at the line of scrimmage last week, and they went nowhere. Do they have a guy that can catch a short pass and, you know, pick up a first down just by breaking a tackle or making something happen? That's what they need. Is that guy going to step forward? I haven't seen it yet.
Mike Grimala with us from the Las Vegas Sun. Marvin Menzies was on Cofield and Company earlier this week, and he was talking about recruiting and the 2019 class, and he had an interesting comment.
Let's be clear. I have no scholarships left. Now, had a player or two that we had previously recruited wanted to commit, well, then I would have been forced with a tough decision, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't come to that. So we have no scholarships left. We're done.
We have no scholarships left. We're done. Do you believe he's done recruiting in 2019?
No, they're not done. It's that's something he has to say just for the sake of the current players on the roster. You know, you don't want to, you know, you tip off, you have your showcase event next week, and you tip off a couple weeks after that. You don't want to put it out there in the media saying, hey, one or two or three of you guys are going to have your scholarships yanked between this now and this time next year. That's probably not the right way to put it out. So I wouldn't expect him to advertise that, yeah, we're going to keep recruiting over these guys that we currently have. But everyone knows that they're recruiting Christian Brown, and they're recruiting Charles Coleman, and they're recruiting these guys from 2019. So I don't think it's something he wants to blast out there, but they are still recruiting guys. And if Christian Brown does want to commit to UNLV, as Marvin said, he will have a decision. I don't think it'll be a tough decision. I think they'll take Christian Brown and then figure out the rest. So I wouldn't put too much stock in that.
You got any hot takes on the basketball showcase being moved to Sam Boyd Stadium the 90 minutes before a football game?
I think it's better than I never liked holding it in the Thomas and Mack Center, because the Thomas and Mack holds 18,000 people, and that showcase is going to draw, you know, 1,500, 2,000 at the absolute best.
I was going to say, that's a positive outlook.
At best. I mean, in past years, not that long ago, but in past years, they've drawn up to, you know, a handful of thousand people. But even then, even if you get 5,000 people in there, it's just, you don't have a March Madness atmosphere, you know? It's just, it feels dead. The crowd, it's tough to inject some life into that, an arena that big with that small of a crowd. So, I don't know how it's going to go at Sam Boyd, but I'm all for getting it out of the MAC.
He's Mike Grimala of the Las Vegas Sun, live in Utah. We're going to have to get an update on your food, your Perkins meal, next week.
Definitely.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
You want some optimism about Max Gillum in the passing game?
Do I?
Max Gillum last week on RPOs was 4 of 8, which isn't great. But when you're 15 of 33, 4 of 8 is terrific.
How are we determining RPOs, though? Because I'm getting really tired of watching...
Everything's an RPO, yeah. Jared!
I'm getting really tired of... No, that's just a play-action pass. Well, you saw the RPO there. Okay, somebody learned a new word!
No, UNLV's RPO is the zone read, and the offensive linemen literally all run wherever Lexington Thomas is going, and like 5 yards down the field, and at the same time, they run a backdoor slant. That's what they do. And Max Gillum hit 4, and they're like 12-yard slants, too. Like, they're big. They're big plays for UNLV's passing game. 4 of 8 with 1 drop in there. That, like, New Mexico was sold out to stop Lexington Thomas. If other teams are going to do that, potentially the counter is, hey, we have this RPO. If you're going to play soft one-on-one coverage, we're going to get 10, 12 yards at a time with these RPO slants. So I got a little bit of optimism. I don't think the passing game is going to be good, but there is something to show, hey, they can counterbalance when teams sell out to stop Lexington Thomas, because that's what New Mexico did. Now, Lexington Thomas still has to do better than 6 for, 38, 39 yards, whatever it was. Got to get more than 6 carries. Like, even if Lexington Thomas is not running hard, he still needs more than 6 carries at the end of the day. They can lose by 50, Jared?
Yes.
Nah, they won't lose by 50. They'll keep it closer than that. 28.
Tyler, you're a bitch.